Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah, I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This coming week is National Police Week. We all need to be thankful for, supportive of, and really appreciate everyone in law enforcement. They're out there protecting us. Police officers are not our brothers in arms, but they are our first cousins in valor, as every day they put their lives on the line to protect each one of us. And happy Mother's Day to all the moms. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Hey, Skip, you work with your local sheriff's office, don't you?
I absolutely do, Colonel. I'm with the Sheriff's Auxiliary in my home county there, and we just have a good time. We do a lot of good things to serve the community, and we got a great sheriff, too.
You do. And you've got a mom, too, so you support Mother's Day, too, don't you?
Well, yes, my mother outranks the sheriff, actually.
Uh-huh. And you've got a wife who's a mother also.
Yes, and she outranks everybody.
Amen, brother. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to honor and stand with those in law enforcement who are out there protecting us. Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will then contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, Reverend Bill Cook will present the Black Robed Regiment. It's a national movement among pastors to encourage all citizens to pray for and actually stand up for our nation. Next, retired Army Colonel Sam Thiessen will discuss STARS, the movement to rid our military, and especially our service academies, of the Marxist ideals like CRT that's being forced on them. And Army vet Dr. John Littell will discuss how our medical people are still being abused and prohibited from actually caring for patients.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really do welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
We know our military defends our nation and our police protect us locally. But now the Internal Revenue Service is apparently a new army. The only question is, who is their enemy? A new watchdog report reveals that the IRS has been stockpiling $10 million worth of weapons, ammunition, and combat gear since 2020. The New York Post reports that the IRS spending $5 million in 2021 alone as the agency ramped up the militarization of its agents. In the last 3 years, the IRS has spent a total of $2.3 million on ammunition, $1.2 million on ballistic shields, $474,000 on rifles, $463,000 on tactical shotguns, and $243,000 on body armor. The slew of new purchases add to an arsenal that was already well-stocked prior to 2020, already possessing 5 million rounds of ammo for its 2,159 special agents. Before 2020, the IRS owned 4,500 firearms, which included 621 shotguns, 539 rifles, and 15 submachine guns. In conjunction with the spike in weapons purchases, the IRS has been hiring significantly more agents in all 50 states. In the job listing for new applicants, the agency notes that potential applicants must be willing to carry a firearm, must be prepared to protect him or herself or others from physical attacks at any time and without warning, and use firearms in life-threatening situations, and must be willing to use force up to and including the use of deadly force.
That's funny. You know, I always thought the IRS dealt with income tax payments. I have zero recollection of an IRS agent being attacked, much less shot. So who is this army going after? This looks to me like the federal government is getting ready to force something on we the people. Ask your Congress critter why this is happening.
I'm getting nervous, Colonel.
Uh-huh.
Not feeling warm and fuzzy about this one.
They may be after your mushrooms.
They could be. Our U.S. Navy confirmed it hired an active duty drag queen to recruit a wide range of potential candidates. Yeoman Second Class Joshua Kelly may be better known these days by his stage name, Harpy Daniels. Kelly has openly performed in drag as Daniels for some time, but was only recently called upon by the Navy to recruit Gen Z sailors. As a digital ambassador, Kelly was tasked with helping the service branch, quote, attract the most talented and diverse workforce, unquote. Kelly became the first of five digital ambassadors in a pilot program from October to March. According to the U.S. Naval Institute, the Navy is poised to miss its fiscal year 2023 recruiting goals by nearly 16%.
Okay, the only reason to have a military is to kill people and break things. If we're really good at that, bad guys won't attack us. That's called deterrence. How does having a drag queen recruiting for us add in any way to our combat readiness? Why would anybody want to serve with people who are attracted to a drag queen? This is really bad news.
Colonel, you are such a bigot. Just such a bigot. Intolerant.
You know,
and so am I.
Yes, I was going to say, it takes one to know one.
Well, Colonel, the Kremlin has reportedly been attacked by at least two drones. Russia now claims that the attacks were an assassination attempt on President Putin. The drones exploded behind the Kremlin walls. Putin said it reserves the right to retaliate whenever and wherever is deemed necessary. BBC News reports that Ukraine denied involvement in the attack. A senior aide to President Zelensky said attacking the Kremlin would change nothing on the battlefield and provoke Russia to take more radical actions in its unprovoked and unjustified war. In Finland, Zelensky himself challenged Moscow's line, telling reporters, quote, "We fight on our territory. We are defending our villages and our cities," unquote. The Kremlin now accuses us of coordinating the drone. After initially accusing Ukraine of the drone attack, the Kremlin shifted and accused Washington of being behind the attack. However, they provided no evidence.
I think it's very unlikely that Ukraine did this. They're doing okay in their own country. I can't see them provoking a big response by doing this. So yes, Russia is, in my opinion, lying. You know, it's time for Russia and Ukraine to begin negotiations to end this conflict. Neither one of them can really win it, and a longer war just means more dead people from both countries. And no, I don't think we, the U.S., had anything to do with it either.
And foreign citizens and companies would need U.S. government approval to buy property within 100 miles of eight military bases under a proposed rule change that follows a Chinese firm's attempt to build a plant near an Air Force base in North Dakota. The Treasury Department's Office of Investment Security will propose the rule. The rule would give expanded powers to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., which screens business deals between U.S. firms and foreign investors and can block sales or force the parties to change the terms of an agreement to protect national security. Controversy arose over plans by the Fufeng Group to build a $700 million wet corn milling plant about 12 miles from the Grand Forks Air Force Base, which houses air and space operations. As opposition to the project grew, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum and U.S. Senators John Hoeven and Kevin Cramer raised questions about the security risk and asked the federal government last July for an expedited review. The review board concluded that it didn't have jurisdiction to stop the investment. The plans were eventually dropped after the Air Force said the plant would pose a significant threat to national security. The new rule would affect Grand Forks and seven other bases, including three that are tied to the B-21 Raider, the nation's future stealth bomber. The Pentagon has taken great pains to protect its new most advanced bomber from spying by China. The bomber will carry nuclear weapons and be able to fly manned and unmanned missions.
Well, I totally agree with the Air Force's decision. We should not allow any group from communist China to own anything in our nation, and especially not anything near a military base. China's our enemy.
And the VA continues to struggle to protect whistleblowers in its ranks, with two-thirds of whistleblowers reporting allegations of retaliation from 2018 to 2022, the Government Accountability Office has found. Indeed, they continually rose during that period. The watchdog agency found that VA cases alleging whistleblower retaliation or other prohibited practices make up over a third of the workload of the Office of Special Counsel, an independent agency that investigates and prosecutes personnel impropriety across the federal government.
Of this, I have no doubt. The VA has been like this for a long time. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some war and wisdom. Then we'll learn about the Black Robe Regiment. At ease, troops, take a break.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your home defense tip of the week. Next time you upgrade to a new cell phone, don't throw your old one away. If your old phone can hold a charge, you can stage this phone for emergency use in a home defense situation. Every cell phone, whether on contract or not, has the ability to call 911. Keep an old phone in the glove box of your car as well as your safe room just in case. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Police Week in America is this coming week, May 14th to the 20th. It was initiated by President John Kennedy in 1962 out of his desire to demonstrate appreciation for America's law enforcement. You know, the 15th of every May is Peace Officers Memorial Day, and the days around it are Police Week. If you see the defense of our nation as a warrior armed with a sword and a shield, then the sword is our military. Our job is to take care of enemies outside of our nation, and we've done that in many wars. The shield is our law enforcement people. They protect us here at home. Two very different kinds of physical defense, but both very necessary. As I said at the beginning of the show, as a soldier, I don't consider police to be my brothers and sisters in arms. They don't do what we do. But they are our first cousins in valor as they daily put their lives on the line to protect each one of us. My son recently retired as a police officer. He worked for that police department for 23 years. I was in the Army as an infantryman for 22 years. I was shot at 10,000 of times more often than my son was, but I was only at risk of being shot at during my 2 years in Vietnam and the 2 weeks of the Detroit riots. He was at risk of being shot every day that he went to work. Most of the people hostile to me were wearing an enemy uniform. None of a cop's possible attackers are that identifiable. The one thing a police officer has to do is to realize that every person he or she approaches may be hostile, may be physically hostile. Most are not, but how do you know? Cops don't know. They have to go prepared for the worst. They don't wish to be seriously injured or killed, and their families live with this risk too. One thing to keep in mind here is that the only perfect person on this earth was crucified something over 2,000 years ago. That means even really, really good people occasionally make mistakes and do dumb things. So we normal people make mistakes and do dumb things too. Well, most of the cops I've known over these years were really good people, but none were perfect. No one can expect anyone to be perfect. So when a police officer is facing a hostile person, either threatening them with a weapon or physically fighting with him or her, that officer has to make some decisions quickly because the officer's life may depend on it. When your life is apparently threatened and you've got a second or two to make a decision, is it well thought out? Of course not. If a person is aiming a gun at you, do you shoot that person? If that person is fighting you, wrestling you on the ground, can you take a chance of being disabled or knocked out? That could lead to the attacker taking your pistol and shooting you. But in every case, I support the officer doing what his instincts tell him to do. And the result is not some kind of bias or prejudice, although the officer will often be called names. When an officer stops a car, he or she approaches the driver. There's hoping the situation will be peaceful and a good citizen will respond to the officer's instructions. But the officer needs to see who's in the car in order to be sure the situation is safe. In every case, the Monday morning quarterbacks will discuss what the officer should have done after they've reviewed the films and witnesses. We need to stand with our police officers all the time, not just on Police Week. They put their lives on the line every day to protect us. However, there are many out there who want to defund the police or to make officers to get training on how to better deal with people. Would anyone want to live in a community without police? I sure want them to come by occasionally on patrol and to be available for a call should there be a need. If someone was trying to break into my home, I'd quickly get armed to get my family into a safe room, and I'd call 911 and let the police do their thing. If I saw someone breaking into a car or a house, I'd call the police and let them handle it. Yes, if I saw someone being attacked, I'd get involved personally and call the police. In all of my life, my home has been broken into only once, and that was when no one was home. I've lived safe because there were enough good police out there who were allowed to do their job. In all of my years, I've never met a cop I felt needed more training. Okay, some of my police friends have told me that there's always a few, and it's the good cops who report the jerks. So, do most cops need training in how to deal with people? In my opinion, the answer is no. However, there are a lot of citizens who need training in how to behave around police. When confronted by a cop, the right response is to show respect and do what you're told. Remember, if you are in any way hostile, the officer must start being prepared to defend against an attack. And the atmosphere now is the fault of the person who's not following directions. The problem for most city police is responding to their city commissions. It's those commissioners who decide hiring and firing and regulating the police. And very often, they are the people who blame the cops when something goes wrong. And those cities are having real problems hiring and keeping officers. Would you want to work somewhere where you put your life on the line every day and the boss is hostile to you? You're a cop and you're not perfect, so you will occasionally make a bad call and you're blamed, attacked, and maybe charged with a crime? Who wants to work there? Yes, if you make a mistake, your supervisor needs to deal with you about the issue. Suppose a youngster is pointing a pistol at you. Do you shoot him and then find out it was a squirt gun? And why was that youngster pointing a pistol at you? It's likely because his community culture is anti-police. The problem is with the community, not the police. So let's all be very thankful for the police and deputy sheriffs that are out there protecting us. Thank them when you have a chance, doubly so this week. Let's let all our cops know we appreciate them and what they do for us. May God bless every one of them. Oh, and May is also Military Month. We'll be discussing that on future shows. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Now, so far, more than 500,000 veterans have filed claims under the PAC Act, which is a landmark legislation that was passed last year that eased requirements to apply for disability benefits for many veterans exposed to burn pits and other pollutants. The VA has processed more than 200,000 of the 500,000-plus PAC Act claims so far, resulting in more than $1 billion in compensation. And of course, that number is only going to rise as they work through all the additional applications. You know, the VA has said that they're proud that 500-plus veterans and survivors have applied for their hard-earned benefits to date. However, they're not going to rest until every veteran and every survivor gets the VA health care and benefits they deserve. The VA began accepting claims under the PAC Act last August, shortly after President Joe Biden signed it into law. However, the VA was only allowed to start processing most claims beginning on January 1st of this year. In addition to expanding health care benefits to many veterans, the legislation added a number of illnesses that are now fast-tracked for disability compensation for affected veterans from the Persian Gulf, post-9/11, and the Vietnam eras. As a result of the bill, more than 215,000 veterans have enrolled in VA healthcare. That's up 15% from last year. The department has also screened more than 3 million veterans for toxic exposure, with roughly 42% of those saying they believe they encountered at least one toxic exposure during their military service. The top illnesses addressed under the PACT Act include hypertension, allergic rhinitis, sinusitis, asthma, and cancers. The VA has said it's approved 80% of the hypertension claims, 83% of rhinitis, 56% of sinusitis, 52% of asthma, and 69% of cancer claims. To handle this terrible backlog, in late 2021, the VA launched a massive recruitment effort to hire claims processors, with a goal to add another 1,900 employees this year. Since October 1st, the VA has added 2,040 new employees, so the VA is really trying to address the claims issue here. However, as of April 22nd, they had over 795,000 pending claims, and 213,000 of those were older than 125 days. In any case, if you're a veteran who may be impacted by the PACT Act, you should submit a claim soon because any claim filed before August 10th will be backdated to August 10th, 2022, which means you'll receive back payment to that date. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss America's Black Robe Regiment, pastors encouraging us to be good stewards of our country. Then we'll talk with Colonel Sam Thiessen about getting our military culture back to being combat ready. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the front lines of freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break and do another 50, then stand at ease.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Well, it's an honor to welcome Reverend Bill Cook. He's the founder and CEO of America's Black Robe Regiment. This is a national association of clergy who want to secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity. That's like taking it right out of the Constitution. These guys must love America. Bill, welcome to the show. I'm glad you could join us.
Ernie, it's an honor to be with you and be listened to by our military veterans.
Bill, you've done a lot of things. You are a clergyman, but you've done a lot of things. Give us a little bit of your background.
Well, I pastored for a number of years, probably in different ministerial roles for about 30 years. But I also took a hiatus in the middle of that when I taught myself how to write software and ended up being employed as a systems engineer for the national security community as a contractor in the intelligence community and also at the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay. So you found enough to keep yourself busy. Well, as a guy who taught American government for a lot of years, I remember the preamble to our Constitution says, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." So you guys are obviously picking up on the intent of our founders. The blessings of liberty are rights from the Constitution. They didn't come from the Constitution. They came from God. So, amen. Bill, you and your team are working to promote the Constitution that we vets took an oath to support and defend. So I guess it's okay to call you a regimental commander. Is that a fair statement?
Well, sometimes I'll steer clear of terms like regiment and whatnot, because I don't want to be construed as a violent revolutionary. I think when we did a pastor's event down in Virginia Beach last year, a couple of articles came out saying I was chomping at the bit for violent revolution, which wasn't the case. You know, liberty needs to be defended at blood, but, you know, we believe God's given us incredible measures to do that, to stand up and contend for this nation and for liberty.
Well, yes. Now, I know a little bit from history that the Black Robe Regiment was a negative that the British referred to Black Robe American clergy, who the British regarded as chief agitators of the rebellion, our war for independence.
What they call the rebellion, and the clergy, and we understood, the Americans understood as the war for liberty and religious freedom. So the clergy were at the forefront of that contest, and the British, they were accurate in associating blame with the clergy.
As I understand the culture of our country, particularly among the founding fathers, it was a very religious culture. They did not want a state religion like the Church of England and was in England, but they definitely wanted, well, they said the blessings of liberty come from our Creator. So they had figured that one out, right?
Right. They understood that. And even though they weren't trying to establish a state religion, what they were trying to ensure was religious liberty, where the state did not control what the church did. So separation, which has been bastardized over the last decade since the Johnson Amendment was passed into law, the separation of church and state was a separation that went only one way. It was designed to keep the government out of the church. And as we've seen in boldly in recent years, the government has insinuated itself into the church through things like COVID, through mask mandates, through demands that the church shut down. Those are authorities that the government does not have. The government has no right to tell the church to shut down and to demand that church members wear masks in services and so forth. That's up to the discretion of the church itself, the local church itself. So it really is a tyranny of the government over the church that we've seen.
It is. And I recollect that the day the Bill of Rights passed, which guaranteed us freedom of religion, 12 of the 13 colonies had state religions. This was a prohibition against the federal government to keep it out. Not only Pennsylvania didn't have a state religion back then. So this is definitely something that I certainly see it the same way you do.
Yes, we have really fallen a great distance from where we were at the founding. And, you know, one of the things that I've been teaching is that I teach that the clergy of the era, of the founding era, were really the founding fathers, because they preached the political worldview and that are embodied in the founding charters for many years by the time the American Revolution started. They made those ideas ubiquitous among the people, so that probably any number of individuals could have sat down and written the Declaration of Independence. Jefferson, in fact, when he wrote the Declaration, admitted that he didn't have to refer to any outside source in writing it. The ideas were so well known among the people that they had been, you know, they had been so consistently preached from pulpits in America, that's where they came from. That's where all those ideas came from.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom, and we're talking with Bill Cook about the Black Robe Regiment. Okay, Bill, what's the goal now? What is the Black Robe Regiment?
The goal is to establish growing companies of pastors within every political jurisdiction in America, beginning at the state level. We're in a number of different states now, and I would say we have a presence in 20 states, with a view to being in all 50 states by the year 2024. And beyond that, we want to see these state groups begin to insinuate their influence down at the local level. We've seen local government in this country corrupted, and it's testament to the absence of the church in government because of the lie of separation of church and state. There's no separation of church and state the way that it is construed by many, even in the church today. The church doesn't understand that it has a curative role within civil society. You know, Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. That means that we are to have a curative impact on government, on local government, also on the civil society. And so when the church divorces itself from government, it essentially turns government over to unbelievers, and it will rot as we see today. It will move toward tyranny.
As it has. You know, I taught American government at college for a number of years, and I've gone to a couple of seminary type Bible colleges to mm-hmm. encourage them that they teach American government there so they can encourage their people to be active in their government. And I batted zero, and I'm not putting anybody down, but the culture doesn't seem to include, you know, I sort of feel that this wonderful country we live in is a gift from God. And I read in the Bible that we're supposed to be good stewards of things God gives us. That's the same thing you're talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, if you look at the American history, the American Revolution, there was a pastor in Lexington. His name is Jonas Clark. He was the pastor of Lexington's Church of Christ. And that Lexington and Clark, they were first in order of importance in the American Revolution. And one historian wrote of Clark, the pastor, Lexington's congregational minister, this is a quote, was more dangerous than all the military stores at Concord or in the colony, and it so infected the whole district with this calm and deep indignation that when redcoats came marching up the old turnpike to Lexington in the gray dawn of April 19, 1775, after gunpowder and weapons, they found all the farmers converted to a doctrine of liberty, which armed and provisioned the young nation for 7 years of war. Now, that was a pastor. He had written all the significant state papers regarding government for that whole region, and he was like many pastors of that era. And he had actually helped train the town militia when the men we call the Minutemen fell out on Lexington Green, which was effectively a lawn of Clark's church. At 1 a.m., Clark went out to greet them at 2 a.m., and I imagine prayed with them. And when Paul Revere arrived on Clark's doorstep at midnight the night before to warn Clark and his two house guests, Samuel Adams and John Hancock, The Redcoats were marching toward Lexington with orders to arrest those two rebel instigators and impound the town's weapon stores. One of those two sons of liberty, it was either Sam Adams or John Hancock, turned to Clark and asked, "Sir, will your people fight?" To which the pastor calmly responded, "I have prepared them for this very hour." And there were many pastors during that era who were right in the thick of the battle for liberty. When the news of what had happened in Lexington reached Hopewell, New Jersey, 3 days later, the pastor of the church in that town jumped up on a big stone block in front of his church and announced that the British were murdering their brethren of New England, and he called the men of the region to go with him to battle against the British. He marched off to Lexington with 50 men from his church. And just incredible, incredible stories.
Yes,
Clark lost 8 men from his church. Clark lost 8 men from his church in that battle, in that skirmish. Another 10 were wounded. And he had to preach the funeral sermon with caskets piled 8 high in the middle of his church.
And there's a lot more to discuss about this. And what we're going to discuss is not promoting violence. That's not necessary at this point, but it is promoting activity. So there's more to discuss about the Black Road Regiment, and Bill will stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. They want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, some days. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Reverend Bill Cook about the America's Black Robe Regiment. Well, Bill, certainly the Black Robe Regiment the British were concerned about certainly did encourage violence against people that were oppressing them. That's not what you're doing now, but on the same token, you are very much encouraging us to get active in protecting our nation and our rights. Do I read you right?
Absolutely, 100% correct.
Because violence, I certainly hope, will not ever be necessary, but it gets more likely if we don't get active in our communities, leading, guiding, opinioning, being politically active, organizing. I think that's where we're headed, right? Let's go there.
Definitely we are. And, you know, there was a sermon that was preached in 1750 by a pastor named Jonathan Mayhew. He was considered the most capable preacher in all of New England. And it was a sermon about resistance to arbitrary authority. And he was correct in regarding some of the edicts that were coming down from the crown in England as arbitrary edicts. And what he said was effectively that if a government begins to demand that you do things that are arbitrary, that are unlawful, then you have a sacred obligation to resist them. And that's what we're saying. We're advocating, like clergy did of the American founding era, that as Christians, we have a right to resist arbitrary edicts of government. And what Mayhew said in his sermon was effectively, if you don't resist arbitrary authority, it's a damnable disobedience to God. And so that sermon, which was distributed throughout the colonies, came to be known as the morning gun of the revolution. It was a famous sermon. I have a copy of the entire thing. And I would ask pastors today, what are you doing to prepare your flock and community for the protracted struggle and battle that began in earnest in 2020 with a stolen election aimed at destroying our sacred liberties and exterminating American Christianity? Your government has been usurped by imposters. Your church is shut down by tyrants asserting authority they don't have. Your people have been murdered in hospitals using ventilators and remdesivir, and they're still being killed with COVID shots and boosters. I would ask pastors, are you saying you can't tell your people what to do because you're not a doctor? I'm not a doctor either, but I know what organized mass murder looks like. And God says my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. So it's incumbent upon pastors to inform themselves and then inform their flocks about their sacred rights and liberties.
You know, and that's very true. I brought this up to one pastor some time ago, a number of years ago. And he said, well, our primary focus is on bringing people into knowledge of Christ, not how they live. And I thought, wow, if you're going to bring them into the knowledge of Christ, isn't that so that they can live the way he would want them to live, doing the things that he would want them to do? I would think so.
Yeah, what we teach pastors is that the temporal well-being of their flock should be as much their concern as their eternal well-being. So if through ambivalence and inaction, leaders in the church allow the members of their flocks to be persecuted and slaughtered, will not God hold them accountable for that? I believe he will. I believe he holds us just as accountable for their temporal well-being as he does for their eternal well-being.
Well, I would think so. We're on earth for a reason. I've always said, people, if the reason I'm still here is because God's not done with me yet. He has something he wants me to do.
Right.
So therefore, doing it is part of the deal, right?
Right. You know, when we talk about informing Christians, informing the church, recent studies by George Barna have shown that only 1 in 25 evangelicals have a biblical worldview. And I would say that basically, without a biblical worldview, the church is cannon fodder. It's imperative that pastors take responsibility for teaching their flocks how to behave in relation to government, in relation to elections. It's imperative. Otherwise, the church ends up participating in its own destruction.
Yes. That's sort of scary, isn't it?
It is.
But that is what we see happening, isn't it?
Yes. You know, Jesus even said, he said, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did I not do this, that, and yada, yada, yada. Didn't I do these great things in your name? And Jesus will turn to them and say, depart from me, you that work iniquity. I never knew you.
Right. This is Colonel Denny Gillow on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with Reverend Bill Cook. Okay, Bill, as I recollect, you mentioned that you've got chapters in about 20 states, mm-hmm. and you've got a goal to have chapters across the nation. And I certainly understand that. Talk to us about what a chapter is. What can we go to our pastors and show them about who you are, what the group is, what's involved? How do we do that?
I can go to our website. I have a document that I can send them. If they'll contact me through the website, they can send me an email at blackroberev, that's R-E-V, as in Victor, blackroberev@leader.com. And I will send them a document on how to get started in their local community. So what we're saying is that pastors need to form alliances with one another. They need to work together to really insinuate their influence directly in local government. You know, one of the things I realize for pastors, I know that they're, you know, I've pastored for a number of years, so I know it's a very demanding role. But this is a time that the church needs to, I believe, needs to adjust to the things that are happening in our government that become so tyrannical. And that pastors need to bring their leadership directly into local government and bring their flocks with them into that role. The church has largely, because of the false doctrine of separation of church and state, the church has largely divorced itself from government. And, you know, because of that, government is rotting. Because the salt of the earth is not being the curator of the civil society that God has called it to be. And so it's imperative that the church return to its role as the steward of government, steward of the blessings of liberty, and that pastors lead that role. And so we're calling for pastors to begin with prayer. Find one other pastor and begin to pray that God would lead you to other pastors that are willing to take a stand in government. And then, you know, we'll provide more guidance and support them in that. But we need pastors across America to step up and really begin to assert their influence. It's a moral influence. The church is imparting a morality in our nation. And so when a pastor stands up to, say, a local government meeting, a school board meeting, and begins to talk about morality, then I believe it has an influence on the deliberations of that governing body. And today, our local governments are doing whatever's right in their own eyes. They're not receiving any spiritual guidance from pastors. But I believe that's a calling on pastors to yes. really begin to assert their moral force within local government.
And if they can't be there, they've got members of their congregation, assistants, whatever, right. That church needs to be present, right?
Right. So when the church comes in and speaks, the local government needs to understand that the pastor's there speaking as well.
Well, that's something that we really have to make that a new part of our culture, don't we? That's an incredibly important thing that has been part of us. It's not now. It needs to get back. And it's not trying to say, join my church or something like that. It is trying to say, We have to do what's right before God.
Right. Because God is holding us accountable for the welfare of our communities, not just our local church where people come to our building.
You know,
we need to take responsibility for what's happening in the community, in the government. And
yes, that means we need to be advocating for things that are right, not name calling, not that kind of stuff.
Right.
Standing up and advocating. Because I'll bet in most school boards, city councils, that nobody's ever heard somebody advocate like that before. And
right. And the average church-going American, the average devout Christian, wants their pastors to do this kind of thing. They want them to, they're not saying, stay out of my private life. They're saying, we need you right now. We need you to get involved in what's happening in our local community. There are pastors doing that around the country, but we need more of them.
Yes. Bill, we're about out of time. Your website is abrr.us. Am I right?
Correct.
So anybody can go to abrr.us and learn about the Black Robe Regiment, find out how to plug in, share it with your pastor, encourage your pastor and your leadership to preferably consider this and then get involved. It's sort of a, if not you, then who, and if not now, then when, because things are going bad, right?
They really are. Bill, and this is the time when the church is needed more than it's ever been needed in America. We're a handbreadth away from losing our country.
Yes, sir. Bill, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your incredible effort to turn our nation around and back to God and to challenge our pastors to step up and take that role. God bless you, brother. We need to stay in touch.
God bless you, too. Just a joy and an honor to be with you today.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Colonel Sam Thiessen about a movement to drive the woke junk out of our military, especially the military academies. It's called STARS. Then Army vet John Rottrell, a doctor, will discuss the abuse of our medical professionals. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.